Coming off on Path to Zero, a veteran fleet manager's take on new decarbonizing truck engine technology.
This new series of engines is very interesting. We're trying anything we can do to try to reduce the carbon footprint. This engine platform that they're coming out with is great because we need that stuff to be on the market.
Welcome to Path to Zero, the podcast about clean energy and the journey toward a low carbon future. Your host is Tucker Perkins, engineer, entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, and clean energy industry veteran, who now serves as president and CEO of the Propane Education and Research Council. Now, here's Tucker.
Welcome to the latest edition of Path to Zero. It's not a stretch to say we're in the biggest energy transition in the history of the world, largely being driven by our increased understanding of the effects of greenhouse gas emissions on the climate. As you can imagine, in my role as head of the Propane Education and Research Council, I talk to a lot of people about how propane can play a much greater role in decarbonizing the world and can do it today by replacing dirtier forms of energy. It's not perfect. No energy that we know of is, but my view is that we can and should take immediate steps to decarbonize, not waiting for some magical day when a silver bullet energy is discovered to make everything better. I'm what you might call a silver buckshot person. I believe we need as many clean alternative energy options to be put into play today as quickly as possible, and especially in key areas like transportation. The question on my mind that has brought us to this episode is whether or not other experts in the transportation space feel the same. So today I'm welcoming a fleet operations expert to the podcast, Kevin Hahn. After a 38-year career, including 30-year run at UPS and most recently at Stericycle as the vice president of Global Fleet, where he oversaw more than 8,000 power and engine units in 17 countries and had responsibility to purchase, maintain, and then decommission fleet assets, he has just recently retired. That gives him time and the latitude to talk with me about the idea of silver buckshot as it applies to fleets. Kevin, it's great to have you today, and welcome to Path to Zero.
Great to be here. Always like to talk about fleet, anything to do with vehicles, so I'll enjoy this.
Well, first off, congratulations on your retirement, which I think was just a few days ago, right?
Yeah, so far it's lasted 3 days, so I picked up a consulting job last night, but I'm looking forward to kind of slowing it down a little bit. But I still like to be involved in fleet, and it's a big part of my life, so I enjoy that.
Well, I think, you know, we're really interested in your perspectives, because I think even as you look back over a great career, you know, you can help us reflect on past decisions, even perhaps look into the future without, you know, a lot of fear about maybe what you say. So let's start with a big picture. Whenever I talk to fleet people, to people that are managing school bus fleets, agricultural equipment buyers, they always have a top five list when it comes to making work truck buying decisions. It seems to be around purchase cost, maintenance cost, operating cost, which includes fuel, to a degree, the overhaul cost. So maybe it's not really guaranteed, but that emissions, the environment, climate change may or may not make the list. Now, you've run big fleets. I think 8,000 trucks at your last job, a lot of those Class 8. Does this list that I've just put out there kind of square up with the reality that you worked in and you had to respond to?
Yeah, you're right, Tucker. Cost is always king. And unfortunately, there's a long list of things that you have to take care of before the environment and emissions come. But I'll tell you, recent events in the world, we're starting to get some people at the big table up on top starting to ask us some questions about emissions. But typically in my day, it's about keeping the trucks rolling, using what I got, and trying to make sure that I can do it within budget. So not a lot of emphasis for a fleet guy right now, especially in our current environment, to worry about emissions, to be honest with you.
You know, one of the things that has, you know, always fascinated me for ever since I've been in the business and been involved with creating new ways to transport vehicles by emphasis on the fuel and the engine as such. You know, we've always viewed diesel as king, right? It's always been the fuel for heavy duty transportation. But in the last, I would say 5 to 7 years, the complexity of diesel, the initial cost, but keeping diesel vehicles operating seems to be becoming very expensive, not only on a first cost basis, but on an operating basis. Was that your experience as well?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, there really hasn't been a major change in the diesel engine ever since they were first invented. What's really transpired in the industry is the emission systems that are put onto the diesel engine to clean it up so that we can use it. And those are extremely expensive, and they're extremely expensive to maintain. So the problem ends up being, if you're trying to work on this cost teeter-totter when it comes to fleet, is we need to run a cleaner fuel so that the engine burns cleaner, so that you don't have to try to make up for the heavy fuels of the diesel. So we're starting to see the pain. You can only put so much equipment on after the engine to clean it up without really starting to have some serviceability and downtime issues. So a cleaner fuel would make a much easier platform for a regular fleet person to use.
Now, I know your general metric for performance, I guess, overall is cost per mile. True, that's the Correct. Overall metric that you really try to perform to, right? Cost per mile?
Correct. It's always been in the past history, it's always been about cost per mile.
So as we think about, I mean, a couple things have happened in the world in the last 3 months that are really changing things. Clearly, diesel fuel has become really wildly expensive. I mean, so expensive that no one could saw that coming. And then I think even that, the minerals that create batteries have started to become expensive. And by the way, I think anybody who's been in this space kind of saw that coming, not because of a war in Ukraine, but because of a general competition for a scarce resource. But walk us through kind of your views on initial cost, because one of the things I struggle to understand is, if cost is so important to a fleet manager, then how do you square up the activism around electric vehicles, battery electric specifically, when the cost is often 3 to 4 times the cost of a current gasoline, propane, diesel technology?
Well, the answer is you can't. I mean, when you got $2.50 a gallon diesel, you're never going to see enough pressure from anyone to look at alternative fuel. It's just, you're not going to. You can't beat the bottom line, right? But as diesel goes up to $5 a gallon, now you're starting to talk about some different situations that come into play, which is, for the environment, a good. It's a good thing, because without more expensive diesel, these other alternatives aren't even looked at. But one of the things that's changed this last couple of years is there's pressure from downward on companies now. Our customers are asking us, what's your role, or what are you doing in the effort to decarbonize, right? So now that our customers are asking, and the price per gallon for diesel is going up, we're starting to look at fleet in a different aspect. You know, fleet was typically just a cost basis necessary evil for most companies, because most companies use fleet as a necessary evil. It's not like they're trucking companies. So it's a bottom line cost to whatever they're selling, right? And they want to keep that cost as low as possible. But now that the world's asking them, hey, look, are you a good company? Do you do good things, or are you a bad company? Now, even Stericycle that I just worked at was asking that very important question. You know, how much carbon are you guys producing? What are you doing to eliminate it? And how can we help you with that? Because no one was to be tagged with running a dirty fleet or having a dirty business, right? So in certain aspects, more expensive diesel actually helps us look at alternatives, because the price will support it, right? Well, I looked at purchasing an electric shifter tractor for our new building in the wound socket that we had. It was three times as expensive as a diesel. And from a fleet perspective, I can't make that happen. It just can't, my budget won't allow it. When you're looking at the last 2 years, I bought between $90 million and $101 million worth of trucks. I need as many as I can get, as cheap as I can get, because of the fleet turnover. So at three times the price, it's too much to bear. There's got to be an equalizer.
Yeah, cost, the lowest cost fleet, as you said, for some fleets, is just a cost of doing business. But for other fleets, it's a true competitive advantage. True?
Correct. Yeah. Well, you look at the big ones, UPS and FedEx, they're, in my opinion, commodities. And when you're pushing cardboard for pennies on the dollar, that expense is very much intrinsic into your profitability. You really have to make it work to be able to survive.
So today, the pressure, as you said, not only for your own corporate image, but as a supplier to many others, now the pressure is to begin to explain to your clients, your partners, how you have become environmentally aware too. How does a fleet manager do that?
Well, then I put the pressure right back on the OEMs, because when they open up the order boards, because of my buying power, I have a big say at the table. So I'm telling Mack, Freightliner, Peterbilt, this is the spec that I need. And by the way, I need to know what you're doing to reduce carbon so that I can report that back to my ELT. And when my executive team is being asked, then we can report that back through. So really the onus is on the manufacturers or the OEMs. I'm pushing those guys hard. I need a truck that doesn't break down as much. The Isuzu platform that we use has tremendous problems with DPF filters, all the emission systems because of diesel. I need that reliability to fall in line with the environmental piece that everyone's looking for. So there's a lot of pressure on the OEMs, and us fleet guys are putting it on them because we're feeling the pressure. And it's got to start with the design of the equipment and the serviceability of the equipment as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize just how complex a diesel system is today to meet emissions. And then I am sure very few people realize that diesel does not necessarily perform like the EPA test. And again, not in a illegal way like the Volkswagen defeat devices, but just because they don't perhaps get the temperature, they don't operate the way the test is. And our testing has been eye-opening to us to see that in many cases, diesels are 8 to 10 times dirtier than their emissions testing reveals, particularly in city traffic, you know, start and stop driving like a school bus. Well, let's go to technology and your OEM experience, because, and I think maybe you've read a little bit about the new launch that we have done with Cummins. Cummins refers to it as a fuel agnostic platform as they go to a broader strategy, thinking about hydrogen, natural gas, propane. But for us, it's a revolutionary new engine, thermally, you know, competitive with a diesel engine, which never thought before could have been done. Power and torque out of, in this case, a 6.7 liter platform like we've never seen before. How valuable is that kind of an engine to you as a fleet manager?
Well, first of all, Cummins has about 37-38% of the market, right? So when I order a truck, in fact, 100% of everything I've ordered in the last 2 years has been Cummins. Okay, so they got a great reputation. They've got a great product. And in my opinion, it's probably one of the most durable, right? So you take the B series motor, that engine platform has been around for 38 years, right? So when I have a truck go down, it's 90%. Let's back up. It'd be 80-90%. Of the problems are emissions related, where the ECM is shut down the engine. I don't spin bearings. I don't break connecting rods. I don't crack pistons anymore. Those days are over. So this new agnostic engine that they got, with the bottom half of it being the B series, I'm all in on it because it's a great deal from the head up. Then you can pick whether you want CNG, propane, gas. So what would be interesting, there's not a lot out on it yet as far as the ignition system of it, but the Cummins 6 series, 6 liters, 7 liters, the B series platform is rock solid. So as a fleet guy, when I'm ordering trucks, I would be more apt to get on one of those engines than I would take the Fiasco with International and the Max Force platforms. You can't afford to have a big fleet with experimental engines in it. You just can't, because if I lose a quarter of my fleet, what are the customers gonna do? They're gonna suffer, right? Much like the supply chain issues we're seeing right now. One of the biggest part of my responsibility as a fleet guy is to manage the fleet service-wise so that they're always available to run. You can't call the customer and say, sorry, our truck didn't run today. You just can't do that. Well, I would be more apt to follow Cummins because of their proven durability and their rock hard engineering, great platform. And then when you start looking at lighter fuels that you can use, cleaner fuels, when you tear those engines down, the heavy fuel, you can just smell it in them. They're dirty, they're heavy, the parts are worn. And when you take apart an engine, I've had a couple of quite a few CNG engines apart myself, and I used to do a little racing, so a lot of alcohol engines. It's like you walked into the office. They're super clean. The parts aren't nearly as worn, and they don't smell. So in my opinion, this new series of engines is very interesting. I would love to be able to have. What I like to do is when they open up the order boards, I can just flat order. I need 600 of these trucks with your B series engine in them. And then later, once I get the booking on the order book and they call me and says, okay, your allotment's filled, here we go. Then I can tell them, hey, look, I want in this zip code, I want this fuel, in this zip code, I want that fuel. For me, that's a wonderful opportunity to be able to both comply with what the people at the big house want. They want better carbon reduction. In some areas of the United States, I can run those engines easily, and in other areas, I can't. So I have the ability to pick between those three fuels and make some good decisions for the company.
And as a fleet manager, you don't seem to be fearful at all of having a multi-fuel fleet, right? You could use propane here, natural gas there, gasoline or diesel over there. I mean, you're perfectly prepared to be a multi-fuel fleet.
Well, if you're running a big fleet, you want diversity in everything. You don't want just one of anything, because what happens if you have a problem, right? So if you could get more diversified in not only your fleet as far as mechanical stuff, but you can get diversified in the fuels. It just makes it easier for you. If, say, I lost a quarter of the fleet, I could still survive, right? I could dual utilize the trucks that I have that are running. So anytime that I can get several different brands in there, several different opportunities to run, I can survive, right? Whereas a small company, if you've got one dedicated truck that uses one dedicated fuel and one dedicated engine, if it goes down, you're done, you're out. So your customers suffer. With these big fleets, you have options. You can move trucks around. You can keep moving, keep running while you work on your problem.
I do want to go back and just add a little color to what you said, because it's comforting to hear you talk about your belief in the Cummins B series engines. I think this is probably my fourth on-road engine launch, and I don't even want to count how many off-road engines we've been a part of, but to see the level of detail that Cummins follows and the precision from every phase of engineering, production, safety training, it has exceeded anything I've ever seen by probably a factor of 10. So it's quite easy to understand why for them. Yeah. Warranty is everything. Uptime is everything. And so I see how Cummins has earned that reputation for sure.
Well, and the latest thing too is Cummins has bought a company. Now they're going to work on regenerative drivetrains too, right? So here's a company you got that's really working on it. There's, you know, there's no silver bullet to this problem that we have about emissions and fuel usage and energy independence. But here I've got somebody that I trust in the OEM lineup that is trying to bring some new ideas to the table. And understand, when I buy a truck or I lease a truck, it's a 7-year relationship, right? We're trying anything we can do to try to reduce the carbon footprint. This engine platform that they're coming out with is great because we need that stuff to be on the market. And we'll test, and we'll test and test and test. And then if it works, we'll buy a lot of them.
Kevin, we're going to take a break. And then we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about this idea of silver bullets, the silver buckshot.
Zero is a big number. Getting close to a zero emissions future starts with using the broadest mix of clean, low carbon energy sources. You might be surprised to know that propane produces a lot of energy for thousands of purposes and millions of people with virtually zero particulate matter, zero impact to the ozone, zero toxicity, and zero potential for storage-related contamination. It's low NOx and low CO2 to boot. Path to Zero is sponsored by Propane. Energy for everyone. Learn more at propane.com. Maybe I'll win
if I zero. We're back with our guest today, Kevin Hahn, a seasoned fleet manager with a long history at UPS and most recently retired as the vice president of global fleet for Stericycle, talking with us today about the issues that face modern fleet managers.
So just walk with me as you are presenting your fleet plan to your board, to your senior management. What are the questions that are being asked of you right now as a fleet manager? Is it all about our cost? Is it about our image? What are the conversations that are going on at the highest levels for fleet managers and their executive team?
In the last past years, it's always been cost, and no one really cared at the executive level at my companies what I bought or where I bought it from. But because of increasing pressure from our customers and environmental concerns, I'm now being asked a lot more questions about where I'm sourcing equipment, what kind of fuel we're using, and what we're doing to help decarbonize the environment. So it's really starting to make a lot of conversations happen that have never happened before. Everyone's interested in what we're doing and how we're going to go about producing less carbon, less emissions, and being more energy independent is a serious problem for everyone, because like my company right now, we don't hedge on fuel. So we have to buy it at the pump. And when we have pump problems, fuel shortage issue rocks us. Some of the cleaner fuels like propane and CNG that are produced, 90% of it's produced here in the United States, it gives us an opportunity to not be impacted by the pump problems. And that helps the environment as well.
And one of the things that's been really gratifying to me over the last, month or so, is to see a lot of the fleets that we have worked with for decades, some of them, now stating, it had nothing to do with us, but stating in their local papers, you know, about how their fleet costs were a third or a quarter of the cost of their diesel fleets, as diesel had, you know, rocked up in price, and they're still running school buses or package delivery or paratransit on propane at a price that's now a quarter of their cost of diesel fuel. It's kind of been really rewarding over the last month to them, to see them making, you know, third party, just volunteer statements about the wisdom of running a propane fleet. But let me ask you something that you would see. For me, I've always said that moving from diesel or gasoline to alternative and clean fuels is not only a wise choice for the environment, for your image, for your cost, but it offers perhaps a real significant benefit to recruiting and retaining drivers. Is that true? Have you seen that?
I haven't seen it because we don't have that equipment, but I can tell you drivers are becoming more and more vocal about what they will and won't drive. No one likes to drive a nasty, stinky truck all day long, every day, and they are more concerned about their own personal health. So when you look at some of the metro trucks, they're typically not on the road, so they're not getting up to temperature, and the exhaust isn't getting cleaned out as much as a highway vehicle. So that's where it really comes into play is, you know, you can attract and keep a good workforce if you don't have good equipment, and they are getting to the point now where they just won't put up with running junk down the road.
Yeah, I've seen that firsthand in my own dealings, that for recruitment, it seems to help, and certainly for retention, where they feel like not only is the vehicle still powerful and cost effective, but that the company is doing something right for the community. It's, to me, it's really the hidden secret in making the final choice to migrate to alternative fuels like propane. All right, walk with me through one other thing. Lots in the news lately about the U.S. Postal Service and their order to go to gasoline, and a lot of teeth gnashing, I would say, in the environmental press about how can that be. Now, for full disclosure, I've been involved with that far longer than I maybe care to admit, and working with them on their choice of vehicles. But as a professional fleet manager, kind of defend that operation. I think you already have in this podcast today, but talk about why he would choose gasoline over battery electric.
Well, as soon as that announcement came out, there's not a fleet manager in the world that didn't know that that wasn't going to happen. You know, it's all about infrastructure. And it's one thing to say that you're going to do that. It's a whole nother thing of actually bringing it to fruition, right? So if you look at a normal post office place, maybe they got 20 trucks sitting there, right? And overnight, we're going to turn this all into electric. Okay, that's great. So you're going to pay three times the cost of the fleet. So you're not going to be able to renew the whole fleet. You're only going to get a quarter of the fleet renewed, which is, if you've looked at those long life body vehicles that the post office has, they're well past their life range. They're really in bad shape. So one, you're not going to renew the whole fleet. Two is now you got to go back over to the post office, actual annex or facility. You got to figure out how you're going to get 480 volts to every one of those trucks that sits there, right? So that's a major cost on top of the vehicle cost that no one's even talked about. So there was not a fleet manager on the planet that saw that come out that didn't know as soon as they said, hey, we're going to have to buy gas. We understood, because you just can't do it. There's not enough money. Now, if the government wants to step up and throw, you know, $10, $20 billion more into the pot, then they can afford to do it. But only the government can do that. A private industry couldn't make that wholesale change overnight like that. And then get past all that, then you got to figure about what's the support for these vehicles? Who's going to work on them? Where's the training coming from? So it's just
in the infrastructure, right? I think that's the hidden story that I find no one really thinks about. But is there adequate not only space to install chargers, but is there adequate amperage and voltage to have the charging infrastructure? Yeah, I thought it was the perfect example of the complexity of a fleet manager, because no one is more obvious than the Postal Service as far as reducing the cost of mail delivery. Yet, you know, so much pressure for them to make a choice that would not have been either reliable or reduced cost. And it's just, I think it was the perfect view into the world of a fleet manager right now.
That's correct. No fleet manager wants to tell the president that his idea doesn't work. And that's what every fleet manager is pressed up against right now. Might not be the president of the United States, but it's the president of the company. And they're saying, I want you to flip this fleet. And they just don't understand how much it's going to cost to do that. Because look, in the end, It all comes down to money. But in this respect, doing the right thing is expensive, and the rest of the world has to catch up to that. And I'll go back to what we were talking about earlier. $5 a gallon diesel gets you at the table to start having these conversations, because when fuel is cheap, no one wants to talk. When the teeter-totter of costs and the environment starts to level out, then you can have some good discussions. But it's going to be a slow, long transfer, but we need alternatives now from the OEMs, and we need to start slowly putting that in a process. As we talked earlier, there's no silver bullet, not one button that you can push that's going to do this. Everyone's going to have to help, and it's going to take a lot of work from a lot of people, slowly renewing their fleets, picking better, more energy efficient and emissions efficient vehicles, so that we can all help decarbonize the world, right? And then I think we'll start to see the results of all the hard work, but you're not going to just see one person be able to go and fix that problem.
You have really already shared with us kind of a lot of information, you know, kind of your thoughts, not only about initial costs, but operating costs, uptime. What changes for a fleet manager over the next 3 to 5 years? Is anything, do any of the priorities change or any of their key decisions change other than just adding in environmental score? Any other changes?
Well, you just got to worry about where the technology is taking you. If you have your own shops, how do you train? What's your next generation of both service personnel plus drivers? To be honest with you, if you're going to go to an electric platform, that's a different driving style. And if those same old drivers that have used an 18 speed are going to go over into a new electric vehicle, you're going to have some resistance. So how do you take your group with you and not lose your employees? And we all know right now, no one can afford to lose any employees, especially the good ones. And then the next thing is how do you support? Where are the parts coming from? Again, I'm going to say it again. Right after cost, it's infrastructure. This whole system that we're about to start moving towards is going to take a lot of work and a lot of support from a lot of people.
I know I've been involved in this really most of my career, and even just last week I was in a technology conference where the conversation really came to architecture and how, you know, diesel architecture is so different than electric architecture and really what that implies for that whole powertrain. It was an amazing kind of a wake-up call for me. So we'll start to wrap up. One of the fun things we do here is to give you a magic wand. You only get to use it one time, but you get to use it to change one thing in the next year that you would have that might have the biggest impact on climate or decarbonization or energy. So if you think about the next 12 months, kind of your context of fleets and fleet management, how would you use that magic wand to change one thing?
Well, I'd have to go right back to infrastructure. I mean, you give me a product that works and you give me the infrastructure that to use it, and we'll use it gladly. Like, no one wants to fight with you about the fact that we need to do something different. But I think with the infrastructure and the awareness that everyone knows that this is going to cost more money. Look, bottom line, it's going to raise the price of all your end products for all the people that are out there purchasing stuff. Transportation cost goes up. It goes into the price. But people have to understand why that awareness needs to be there, why that price is going up. And then the infrastructure to run it, and us fleet managers will adapt. We'll run whatever you want us to run, and we'll repair whatever you want us to repair. But you got to give me a platform and the infrastructure to do it with. After that, it's just awareness to the general public that, hey, there's a cost to being clean, and are you prepared?
You've shared so many great insights for us today. Let me just ask, is there something else you'd like to kind of tell our listeners that are important to you to be heard?
Well, I'm probably the only person on the planet that got excited when diesel fuel went to $5 a gallon, because as a good human being, you don't want to do bad things to the environment. But at $2.50 a gallon for fuel, no one's going to make any moves. So I think it's a great time for the world to understand the importance of independence for energy and also how we protect the earth. So I know sometimes people view us fleet people as the dirty underbelly of the world, but you know, we can also be the leaders when it comes to trying to make the world a better place. And I think this is a great start.
One of the most listened to podcasts we've done was titled, "Is This Diesel's Last Decade?" And I think, you know, working with the likes of Cummins and a lot of other really high profile names, you begin to see the pressure on not only fleets, but engine providers to come up with alternatives to diesel. And I think it does make you wonder, you know, just what fuels will replace diesel as the dominant fuel in transportation. But I know for me, I certainly believe propane is one of those fuels.
I absolutely believe that. I think that when a stroke of the pen can change the way a state looks at what you can run and what you can't run, I think that any OEM is being pressed harder right now to find alternatives than they ever have before.
And for us to be able to meet, you know, CARB's 2024 emissions with a simple three-way catalyst, in fact, an inexpensive three-way catalyst, and, you know, with this new Cummins engine being on the front end of the next level of technology development, which, you know, the CO2 output is insanely low, to know that we'll meet 2027 emissions with a three-way catalyst, it's jarring to me about how simplistic and therefore economical to purchase and economical to operate our engines will be. So it gives us great hope in the future of propane as a transportation fuel. And then we begin to talk about renewable propane and moving the carbon intensity from 79 to perhaps zero or even negative. It just gives us even more hope.
Absolutely. It's a great time for fleet because we're in the middle of probably one of the biggest transitions that we've ever had since we went away from carburetors and went into fuel injection. So this is the next big step for fleet. And I think the topside pressure is going to push this one because we've never had that before.
Well, it has been great to have you on Path to Zero today. One of the last traditions that we'll share with you is that we like to plant a tree in honor of our guest in a national forest. Now, did a little homework on you. I know you grew up in Iowa, and I was shocked to see that no national forest exists in the entire state of Iowa. So beyond working on how to use propane wisely, we might work on getting some national forest into Iowa. But I also know you live in Texas and not terribly far from the Davy Crockett National Forest. So would you be willing to let us plant a tree in the Davy Crockett Forest in your name, please?
Absolutely. That would be wonderful.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much for being our guest. It's great to talk with you and love to keep in touch with you.
Yeah, that would be great.
To all our listeners, that wraps up this episode. And a quick reminder, if you want to send a note to comment on an episode or give us a new topic to consider, just shoot me an email at path2zero@propane.com. That's path, the word T-O, path2zero@propane.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn. Hope to hear from you, and I look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Path to Zero.
Thank you for listening to Path to Zero with Tucker Perkins. If you like what you've heard, subscribe and rate us your favorite podcast app. You can email us with questions or comments to path2zero@propane.com.